Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a new report ranks Ohio 8th in the nation for drug overdose deaths. That's not good, but it wasn't too many years ago that our state was nearly at the top of that list. So are things really improving, or is the problem just getting that much worse elsewhere? Also this morning, you remember we were talking yesterday about the importance of good gut health for overall wellness. A new campaign is highlighting the similarities between protecting the Earth's ecosystems and protecting our own. And even though it's not Friday yet, we have a bonus recipe this week from the Domino's Sugar Kitchen that puts a fresh twist on a traditional crowd-pleasing summer treat. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, June 13th, 2024. Did you see the video from Cedar Point earlier this week? If you don't know the story that I'm talking about, apparently a pair of camels from the petting zoo at Cedar Point decided to go for a stroll. They decided to take themselves out for a walk on Tuesday. Samson and Artie somehow got loose on Tuesday from the barnyard petting zoo and went for a stroll through the Frontier Trail area. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but park workers were able to round up the camels, return them to their pen. Like we said, nobody was hurt, thank goodness. There were a couple of moments where the camels did not seem to be too enamored with the crowd that was around them on the Frontier Trail, and they were kind of jumping, and yeah, they were getting a little jumpy, and somebody could have been hurt. Thankfully, nobody was, but the camels decided to take themselves out for a little stroll at Cedar Point earlier this week. A little extra added excitement there at the point on Tuesday. Let's see, what else going on among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day? So it is vacation season. Maybe your vacation involves just a trip to Cedar Point. Maybe it involves something a little bit, you know, further out. Maybe you're going, you know, I don't know, wherever. Or maybe you're just staying closer to home. Not all vacations, of course, involve getting on a plane or getting in a car and traveling a far distance away from home. For those who are opting for a staycation, it turns out where you live may play a big role in whether a staycation is a good option. WalletHub is out with their list of the best and worst cities for staycations. And just to hit the highlights here, number one on the list is Orlando. Wait, yeah, no kidding. If you live at the home of Disney and Universal and all of that, if you live in Orlando, then yeah, staycation is not a bad deal. Number two on their list, Honolulu. Well, duh. If you live in Honolulu, why would you need to go anywhere else? So this is like one of the strangest rankings, and I love WalletHub's lists because they're always rather interesting, but this one is kind of obvious, it seems. You know, this one would be kind of obvious. Orlando and Honolulu, number one and number two on the list of best cities for a staycation. Las Vegas, another one up there on the list at number four. So, duh. And Tampa, Florida would be fifth, which, again, while it might not be as glitzy and glamorous as Orlando or Honolulu or Vegas, Tampa, you could see where it'd be at number five. But the real surprise in the top five cities, best cities for a staycation, the real surprise is at number three on the list. Number three, best staycation city in America, Cincinnati. Cincinnati, really? I mean, not to disparage Cincinnati, it's a wonderful city, it's maybe my favorite city in the state of Ohio, but would that be on your top five list of best staycation cities in America? I don't know if I would put it quite there, but that's what they say. So if you're interested, let's see. Speaking of gatherings, things going on this summer, thousands of people are expected in Bedford County, Tennessee this weekend to celebrate one of the sweetest combinations in the South. It's the annual RC Cola Moon Pie Festival. The annual RC Cola Moon Pie Festival in the tiny village of Bellbuckle, Tennessee, happening on Saturday. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend, head to Bellbuckle, Tennessee. I have no idea where that is, but that just sounds like the kind of town that would have the RC Cola Moon Pie Festival. You know what I mean? That just sounds like the town of all of the towns in America to host the RC Cola Moon Pie Festival. Bellbuckle, Tennessee would be the place. The event will include a parade, clogging performances, live music, and the crowning of the RC Cola King and Moon Pie Queen. And if that's not enough fun, the gathering culminates with the cutting and sharing of the world's largest moon pie. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend, and here's the best part, I don't think you'll have to dress up. I think it is definitely a come as you are kind of event. I don't think you have to get all dressed up. Probably even the king and queen candidates won't get dressed up for this, you know? Let's see. Speaking of summertime events, the Paris Olympics are right around the corner, and guess what's happening? They have a bit of a problem. At the Paris Olympics, a tropical disease known as dengue, is that how you pronounce it? Dengue? D-E-N-G-U-E. This tropical disease has been popping up across Europe just in time for the Paris Olympics. It is passed through infected mosquitoes and causes severe headaches, fevers, muscle and joint pain, rashes, and swollen glands. It is a common disease in Central and South America, but they say due to changing climate, the Mediterranean has become a comfortable spot for the kind of mosquito that acts as a carrier. So those going on vacation to dengue-prone areas should consider wearing long sleeves and pants, using insect repellent, and sleeping under a mosquito net. So that should make the Olympics a lot of fun if they're watching that very closely. Can you imagine if that were to, if they would get an outbreak there in the athlete village at the Olympics? Wow, that would really be awful. Let's see. Here's another summertime story that I thought was kind of interesting. In the city of Pittsburgh, I don't know, you know, we were talking about best cities for a staycation. Maybe this is one of the reasons why Pittsburgh did not make the list. Pittsburgh, you know how warm it's been. They have still not turned on their 200 public water fountains for the summer. None of the public water fountains are operational. They shut them down for the winter, obviously, because of the cold climate. But they haven't yet turned them on for the summer. And apparently there is only one person in all the city who is qualified to do the job. It says here, although the Department of Public Works has hired 100 new employees, only a plumber is allowed to turn on the fountains, and the department currently has only one on staff. You're going to hire 100 people, maybe might want to hire a second plumber. Just a thought. The one plumber is also responsible for filling swimming pools and turning on spray parks. And those are the things that are the higher priority that take precedence over the water fountains. So that has to be done before the water fountains can come on. Now, it does say the department has the budget to hire two more plumbers. Pittsburgh Councilman Bobby Wilson says, I'm looking to find the money to contract out because we have to get this done. It's far too long already getting these warm. Isn't that crazy? Just one person in the entire... I don't know what the population of the city of Pittsburgh is. I suppose I could look that up. But it seems like there should be more than one person to turn on all the water fountains and fill all the swimming pools and turn all of the water parks service back on. Should be more than one person, you would think, in Pittsburgh who could do that. But apparently not. And finally, this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, we were mentioning the other day how the names Caitlin and Clark have become very popular as baby names over the past year because of all of the media attention on the basketball player. Caitlin for a girl becoming much more popular. Even Clark for a boy is becoming more popular thanks to the Caitlin Clark effect. Well, it is not uncommon for pop culture to be a common source for inspiration that parents will take on naming their baby. And this year seems to be no different. In addition to the Caitlin Clark effect, according to Baby Center, parents who are welcoming children in 2024 have been finding name inspiration in everything from fantasy epics to sports stars and more. We mentioned the Caitlin Clark effect. Pop culture inspired names landing on Baby Center's list of biggest baby name movers this year. Chani, which is Zendaya's character in the movie Dune, Chani. Okay. That moved up 3,300 spots for girls. While the character's secret Freeman name, Sahaya, made this year's list for the first time. Man. How would you like to go through life with a name like Chani or Sahaya? Another fantasy character, Percy, from Percy Jackson and the Olympians fame, is up 296 spots for boys and 700 spots for girls. So Percy could be a boy's or a girl's name, apparently. Perseus is up 206 spots for boys. And the show's Greek gods like Ares and Hermes are also seeing an uptick. This was interesting. Bridgerton, the steamy romance series on Netflix. Bridgerton is also apparently a huge inspiration for parents this year. Names like Anthony, Eloise, Francesca, and Gregory are all seeing a spike attributed to the popularity of Bridgerton on Netflix. And this season's main character in this season of Bridgerton, Penelope, is also a very popular name at number 33 on the list, while Charlotte, as in Queen Charlotte, is even more popular, landing at number 5 on this year's list of top baby names. So some of those aren't so bad. I mean, okay, Charlotte, Penelope. Penelope is a really pretty name, but some of those other ones from those fantasy epics, I don't think so. That would be... I'm not going to saddle my kid with those names. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected again today with a high around 90. A chance of a storm tonight, low in the mid-60s. A parochial school teacher in Tiffin is facing charges of inducing panic. A teacher at Calvert High School is accused of writing a threatening note that was found in the school last month.
The note referenced someone having a gun inside the school and threatened those that were there. According to Tiffin police, a grand jury indicted 47-year-old Rhonda Huffman. The school placed her on administrative leave once she was identified as the prime person of interest. She's charged with two counts of felony inducing panic.
WTOL 11's Kaylee Marentet reporting. The Findlay Rotary Club says Olivia Smith, a recent graduate of Findlay High School, has been selected as their 2024 recipient of the Richard E. Dick Doherty Scholarship. Olivia plans to attend Huntington University in the fall to pursue a degree in film production and a minor in broadcasting. The Richard E. Dick Doherty Scholarship Fund was endowed by the Findlay Publishing Company and the Findlay Rotary Club in 2004 in honor of Doherty, who passed away in 2008. The scholarship is designated for students studying art, including graphic design, music, dance, theater, or broadcasting. Residents of a mobile home park at Indian Lake are taking legal action against their landlords.
A lawsuit filed in Logan County Court says the owners of the property in Lakeview wrongfully demolished several homes. Tornadoes hit more than 3 months ago. Families are still struggling to find a new place to call home. 17 residents that used to live at the mobile home park have now joined the lawsuit. Some of them say they came back to find their homes had been demolished without any notice. In April, the landlords notified tenants the premises were uninhabitable and leases would be terminated by the end of May.
ONN's Clay Gordon reporting. The Marathon Center for the Performing Arts in Findlay has announced its 2024-25 main stage series lineup, which includes Jody Messina, Mandy Patinkin in concert, and much more. You can see the full main stage series lineup in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, a new report ranks Ohio 8th in the nation for drug overdose deaths, which is not good, but remember, it wasn't too many years ago that our state was nearly at the top of that list. So does that mean things are improving in Ohio, or is the problem just getting that much worse in other states? We are joined this morning by the executive director of Hancock County Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services, Precious Stubbe. Let me start with that basic question. Are we improving in combating the drug overdose problem in Ohio, or is it just other states are catching up and passing us?
A little bit of both. Excuse me. Good morning. A little bit of both, I would say. Ohio is definitely improving. And in some areas of the country, it is getting worse. So it's a balance, but we've definitely done better. And now, we've done better here in Hancock County.
That was going to be my next question. How do these numbers, and by the way, just want to make sure that I clarify, this is a report that is actually released by the Amethyst Recovery Center, which is an inpatient facility that is based in Florida. They use data from the Kaiser Family Foundation, the CDC, and the UN's International Narcotics Control Board to compile these statistics. How do the numbers locally compare to, you know, what we see statewide and what we see nationally?
In 22, we had 28 deaths here locally due to overdose. In 23, we had 10. So we went down by almost 2/3. In 24, which we're halfway through the year, and I believe we have 2 with maybe 1 pending. So we are in single digits here in 24 as well.
So that is certainly good news. What do you attribute that decline to? Is it better education? Is it treatment programs, more effective treatment? Is it what accounts for that decline?
Well, like with everything, I don't think there's any one thing. I would say the two biggest things. The first is, I think, the widespread availability of Narcan, the understanding of Narcan as a first aid tool. So the same way we know if somebody has a laceration and is bleeding, we all know apply pressure to help someone. Mm-hmm. If somebody is in an overdose, the widespread knowledge, boy, let's give them Narcan. It's not going to hurt them, and it's easy to do. Having that and having the Narcan widely available is helping all over Ohio and is helping here. We have areas of our community that have embraced the first aid concept. We have Nalox boxes in all ends of our community. We have our first vending machine. We have most people, like we say to every business, I say to everyone, if you have a first aid kit, Just like you have a Band-Aid in it, you should have a Narcan kit in it. Mm. You never know when you'll have the opportunity to save someone's life. So I think that's the first biggest thing.
So, and obviously, we've talked about Narcan over the years since it was first introduced and made available for the general public, and it has been rather controversial. Let me dig in a little bit deeper into that statistic. As you mentioned, that is one of the primary reasons why we're seeing fewer overdose deaths. But is that really making a dent in the number of overdose cases that we have? I mean, we're seeing fewer deaths, but are we seeing just as many incidents of overdose as we ever have?
No, actually, the number of overdose visits to the emergency room are down. The number of EMS runs for overdose are down. So I would say that by and large, all of the statistics in our community related to overdose and death, all those surrounding indicators are also down in our community.
We mentioned earlier in the week that the Be Healthy Now Coalition, along with the health department and other entities, I know Adamus is involved in this, promoting the health assessment that is being circulated now. Do this every so often. I believe it's every 3 years. And the survey is out there. I know one of the questions, or a couple of the questions that are asked on that health survey, is about addiction, the availability of illicit drugs, prescription drugs that may be abused, and so on and so forth. What is the ultimate goal, the takeaway from that, and again, continuing to gather more data about the state of addiction and overdose in the community?
Well, what I would say about the health assessment, it is the opportunity for every citizen in this community to tell us what they see. You know, and that is so important because we can't be out there in every neighborhood and talk to every individual. Mm-hmm. And so hearing the voice of the people and comparing that then to the statistics that we see in terms of people entering services, the emergency room, so on and so forth, it helps give us a balanced picture.
And you mentioned the Narcan is a big reason why we have been able to reduce the number of deaths. It has made a big dent in the problem. Obviously, Narcan gets you past the first hurdle. The goal, again, this is something we've talked about in the past, the goal is to hopefully get those individuals then into treatment. Is the availability of treatment where it needs to be in this community?
I would say right now, anybody that wants to access treatment, the availability is there. And if it's a level of treatment that is needed that's not available, we are happy to coordinate that for someone. But I think the other big change in our community is the change in the conversation, and a more empathetic understanding mm-hmm. of the issue, a response from this community, from our churches, from our employers, from, you know, parks, recreation. I think that there is an understanding that these are individuals who are members of our community who are struggling. And if we see someone struggle, we know there's services to link them to, and it's okay to reach out and help get them linked. And I think that that's part of the key to our success, is that embracing of individuals that are struggling and getting them to that continuum of services that have been developed.
And here's hoping that the rest of the state of Ohio and the rest of the country can get a handle on it in a similar way. Let me ask you this. In recent years, obviously, it has been opioids and fentanyl that have driven the overdose crisis locally and around the country. Is that still the case? Is that still the narcotic of choice, I guess, for lack of a better term?
The answer to that is yes. However, there are more cases of individuals who are not using fentanyl as their drug of choice.
Mm-hmm.
However, most of the other drugs are laced with fentanyl. So the causes of death, when you look at the overdose death, almost 99% have fentanyl in them. You know, the cause of death is fentanyl. Doesn't mean that that was the primary substance of use.
Yeah.
It just means that so many things are laced,
yeah,
which is one of the reasons why the availability of Narcan is so important, because people are saying, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to use meth, or I'm going to use cocaine, or I'm going to use X,
but
because I'm afraid of fentanyl. I don't want to overdose.
Yeah.
But it's laced, and so then there's an accidental overdose.
So all of those things can and are laced with fentanyl. We have a link on our webpage for more information about the resources that are available to combat drug addiction, drug abuse in our community at our webpage, goodmornings.net. And again, Precious Stubbe with us this morning, Executive Director of the Hancock County Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services. Precious, thanks very much for the insight. We appreciate it.
Chris, thank you. And thank you for being part of changing the conversation in our community.
Well, a new campaign from Culturelle Probiotics and global conservation nonprofit Rewild is highlighting the similarities between endangered ecosystems on Earth and the endangered ecosystem within the human gut microbiome. Interesting topic here. We are joined by Robin D. Moore, the Vice President of Communications Marketing at Rewild. First of all, let's talk a little bit about what you do. Why is it so important to be protecting biodiversity in our ecosystems?
Yeah, it's really at the heart of what at Rewild we do. You know, Earth's ecosystems are essentially what sustain us. They are our first line of defense against emerging diseases, climate chaos, and they provide us with everything from clean air and water, food and medicines. So really, they are the fabric of life on our planet. Our research shows that populations of wildlife have declined by nearly 70% since 1970. And with that loss of biodiversity, we see ecosystems being significantly disrupted, lowering their productivity and quality. So at Rewild, we believe that healthy people need a healthy planet, and that's why we are laser-focused on protecting and restoring the fabric of life on our one shared home.
So let's kind of tie this together then. What do these endangered ecosystems have to do with our gut microbiome?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one I would have had a couple of months ago as well. but when Culturelle Probiotics came to us to highlight some of the interesting parallels, we saw some similarities. So the gut microbiome is made up of trillions of living, breathing bacterial species, and it's also facing a loss of biodiversity. So data shows that it's lost nearly half of its microbial diversity over the last 70 years. So really, when we consider these facts, we realize that the microbiome has a lot of the same markers as the Amazon rainforest, the coral reefs, the grasslands of our world. So the gut itself is an ecosystem, and it's at risk. So at Rewild, we often say that rewilding the world starts with rewilding ourselves, and that we are a part of and not apart from nature.
So then talk a little bit about this campaign, this Protect the Gut Microbiome campaign that you have partnered together with on.
Yeah, so we at Rewild have teamed up with Cultural Probiotics to draw attention to these similarities between the at-risk ecosystems of our world and the ecosystems within. So just like so many of the Earth's biomes, the forests, the grasslands, the human gut microbiome is vulnerable. And similar to the ecosystems of our world that Rewild works to protect and restore, the gut is faced with a similar barrage of threats to its biodiversity. So together, we're really using the Protect the Gut Microbiome campaign to raise awareness of the importance of protecting biodiversity in all ecosystems, both inside and out, because we must take care of ourselves to take care of the planet.
You talk about the way both the those ecosystems inside our bodies and outside in the world around us, the way the diversity has declined in recent decades. Is there a reason for that, or is it multifactorial?
Yeah, it's multifactorial. I mean, you know, I think it's the pressures that we are putting on the ecosystems and the stressors. So whether it's you know, in the natural ecosystems of the world, you know, whether we're destroying it through exploitation for extractives, and similarly our own ecosystems, it's pressures and stressors that we're putting on our internal ecosystems through our lifestyles. You know, we've moved largely away from living sort of in balance with nature to urban centers where we're more disconnected. And I think that one of our biggest challenges we face is that disconnect from the natural world, and it exacerbates in many different ways. So I think the result of our sort of actions, our current lifestyle, means that we're putting a lot of pressures and stressors on the different ecosystems.
And the reason I ask that is to ask this: what happens when we don't properly care for these ecosystems, again, both internally and externally?
We see that when the ecosystems of our world suffer, we suffer. There is a high risk of infectious outbreaks, like pandemics. There's a decrease in the availability of fresh water and food, and an increase in the threat of harm from catastrophic weather events, so floods and earthquakes and tsunamis. We also know that our resilience to changes in our Earth's ecosystems hinges on the richness of biodiversity. So it really is a buffer. And we sometimes refer to biodiversity as the immune system of our planet. And that's why I think the mission of this campaign is pivotal, because healthy ecosystems are diverse ecosystems. But, you know, I think just as we've seen the damage caused to ecosystems, we also have seen that that damage can be halted and in some cases even reversed. And I've seen with my own eyes what happens when you restore biodiversity to an ecosystem. So it really is possible to restore balance and diversity to these ecosystems.
Again, Robin D. Moore is the Vice President of Communications Marketing at Rewild. They are partnering with Cultural Probiotics on a program aimed at protecting the gut microbiome and, by extension, protecting our ecosystems everywhere around us. Where do we get more information?
Yeah, you can get more information at protectthegut.com.
Robin, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
This was a story that made big headlines earlier this week. With Independence Day right around the corner, we learned that legendary competitive eater Joey Chestnut has been banned from competing in the 2024 Nathan's Famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest. Big, big scandal. The hot dog eating contest, the 4th of July, the 16-time winner ran afoul of the event by signing an endorsement deal with Nathan's rival, Impossible Foods, promoting their new vegan hot dogs. And so they said, sorry, Joey Chestnut, yes, you've won it 16 out of the last 17 years, but if you're going to be promoting, if you're going to be the spokesperson for these vegan hot dogs, then you cannot participate in the Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July. I'm sure that Joey Chestnut's competitors were happy to hear that he would not be, finally, we're going to get a chance. But still, to ban a legend over something like this is just scandalous, and everybody all up in arms about this. Back in September of 2016, as it happens, we spoke with Joey Chestnut about his unique record-setting talent. It is today's Throwback Thursday.
What got you into competitive eating in the first place? How does one become a competitive eater?
I swear it was not my idea. My little brother, my little brother knew that I could eat more than all the siblings, and he made me do my first contest. I was 21 years old, and he signed me up to a contest, and it was a lobster eating contest, and I tied for third, but I fell in love with the whole competition.
So the rest, as they say, is history. So lobster eating, that's it. Now, I know that there are more than you're most famous for the hot dog eating contest, of course, but there are others as well. Do you have a preference as to what you eat competitively, or does it really matter? I mean, can you even taste anything when you do one of these contests?
Oh, absolutely, I taste it. If the food's not something I like, then it becomes real work. It's hard. It's awful.
So do you have a preference?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love it. good meat. A good contest. Like I did a rib contest in Reno where they made really awesome ribs. There's a buffalo wing contest in Buffalo. I love it when festivals where they take pride in the food. Nathan's hot dogs. I eat those at home. So a food that I eat regularly, it makes it a lot easier to eat in contest.
That's interesting, because I would think you eat 70 of those in 10 minutes, you'd be set for a while. Probably not something that you would eat at home, but you say you do. And I know you've been asked about this, too, before. Do you ever worry about your health? I mean, it's aside from the sheer volume of food you eat, it is not always necessarily the healthiest food. I mean, you never hear about a competitive salad eating contest.
Yeah, absolutely. I worry about my health. I think it'd be silly not to. Yeah. I go to the doctor, get all my blood work done. Everything's working really well. All my kidney and liver function, everything's going well, what the doctor said. And then I'm a little bit heavy, but I gain weight, lose weight a little bit. But the doctor's really happy.
So do you go on like a diet before you do one of these contests? Do you like go on a diet, or do you prepare in any way? How do you prepare for a contest?
Oh yeah. So every contest I prepare a little bit differently, but for a big contest, before a practice, I'll start fasting, and I'll go in absolutely empty, and then when I do the practice, by being empty, it allows the food to get through me, digest really quickly.
Yeah.
And then after the practice, I try to eat really healthy before my next, and then fast before my next practice. And every practice, I build my tolerance for
that
food.
That's,
it's not like I can't eat like that every day, otherwise I gain weight.
Yeah, so sure. What is it like to have a world record in your name, to hold that, to know that you have done something that no one has ever done before?
It's ridiculous. The whole thing, I love it. And there's no better feeling than you're being on stage next to these people who think they're the best at what they do, or at what you do also, and you just prove them wrong. And knowing that their body will break before they can catch you.
Have you ever thought that there will be a time where you can't do this anymore?
Oh my God, yeah. If last year when I lost the big contest, I was like, oh my God, if I lose again, it'll be just demoralizing. And I'm so competitive. I know there'll be a time where I'm either too old or I'm going to slow down to a point, but I'm just having fun and living in the moment. And I'm like Peter Pan right now.
Our conversation from September of 2016 with record-setting competitive eater Joey Chestnut, who earlier this week was banned from participating in his signature event, the event that made him a household name, the Nathan's Famous 4th of July Hot Dog Eating Contest. There is, however, a happy ending to the story. Mr. Chestnut and his longtime rival, Takeru Kobayashi, will be taking part in a hot dog eating challenge on Labor Day. It says here, Joey Chestnut banned from the competition, 4th of July competition this year due to a rival endorsement deal he signed with Impossible Foods. Kobayashi announced his retirement from competitive eating due to health concerns just last month. He has won the 4th of July hot dog eating contest 6 times to Joey Chestnut's 16. The last time the pair have faced off was 2009. So the two of them will face off in a hot dog eating challenge on Labor Day. It will be streamed live on Netflix. So we'll definitely want to check that out. At least we won't be denied our Joey Chestnut fix for the entire summer. It is our Throwback Thursday this morning.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So you heard the story in the news about the teacher at Calvert High School in Tiffin that apparently was behind the threatening note that caused lockdown last month. Teacher who has been with the district since 2018, she's 47 years old, you would think she would know better, was the person who wrote a note claiming someone in the school had a gun and was going to hurt people. So just a very bizarre story. You remember when that happened last month, caused all kinds of panic, and it turns out it was a teacher behind the whole thing, which was kind of weird. So I don't know if there's a competition going on, but I happen to see this story on the Newswire about a second grade teacher in California who was arrested after allegedly teaching class while drunk. Wendy Munson, her name. She was arrested at Nuestro Elementary School in Sutter County, California. At the time of her arrest, deputies said that she had a blood alcohol level twice the legal limit for driving, which is way higher than the legal limit for teaching a second grade class. Is there like a competition going on for dumb teachers to do dumb things? We've got our top two candidates here, I think. Prosecutors actually say there is not enough. She was arrested actually several months ago, and she was facing charges of DUI because they figured she had to get to school somehow, right? And for child endangerment. But prosecutors now say that they have dropped the charges because there is not enough evidence to prove that an actual crime had been committed. So, but I'm guessing that she's probably out of a job. It's just a guess. Elsewhere in the broken news, sometimes you don't have to go very far, as we know. Did you hear the story about the Toledo grandmother who reportedly opened fire on her teenage granddaughter last year, now being sentenced? Grandma opening fire on her granddaughter. In case you don't know the backstory here, the incident happened last August when 55-year-old Jackie Chandler Davis and 19-year-old Christina Wallace got into an argument which escalated to the point that Christina slashed the tires of her grandma's car. And grandma wasn't taking that lying down. She then opened fire on her granddaughter. She did not shoot the girl, but she did strike a passing vehicle. She has now been sentenced to 3 to 4 years in prison on firearms and firearms charges and a charge of felonious assault. Wow. That's a what a family. That's grandma opening fire on her granddaughter. Okay. Not the happy, loving family that you... These aren't the Waltons. Did you hear about this from the International File, the broken news? A 10-story building in Japan, a condo complex, 10-story building in Japan, will now be torn down just weeks before the first resident was set to move in. Before anybody even had a chance to move in, they're tearing down the building that they just built. And why? Because it is blocking the scenery. The almost completed condominiums are blocking views of Mount Fuji to other residents in the area. According to the developer, Sekisui House, said, quote, we were aware of the culture that values scenery, but we failed to consider it adequately. We apologize to the contracting parties. They're tearing down the building that they just built before anyone had a chance to move in. Here's the thing. They sold all the condo units, too. Now they say that they will refund the purchase price to all of those who bought condos in the new building. Wow, that is pretty extreme there. They're tearing down the building. Here is another story from the domestic side of things and the broken news. We often have stories of people stealing unusual things. Here is another. In Fort Worth, Texas, police say a woman who drove off in a mortuary van is under arrest. Stealing a mortuary van. And yes, there was a body inside. The woman's name is not given. It just says she's 35 years old, allegedly got into the van this week and drove it out of the mortuary parking lot. So it's not like she didn't know what she was stealing. She knew it was a mortuary van. She drove it right out of the mortuary parking lot. So it's not like she was confused. Police soon located the van and its contents. I love the way they put this. Its contents were returned to the mortuary. Charges are pending. Man, what would possess someone to steal? Maybe they were possessed. Maybe that's what it was. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is our viral story of the day. The story, it's a woman from the United States. I'm not sure exactly where, but the story happened in the Philippines while Dana McDaniel was traveling from the U.S. to Thailand, stopover in the Philippines, apparently, and she was feeling jet lagged. So she decided to take some vitamins. And so she pops a handful of vitamins. But she got a bit of an unexpected side dish. Ms. McMichael says, without looking, I threw everything into my mouth and washed it down with some water. at one point, she realized that her wedding ring was missing. You know where this is going? She actually swallowed her wedding ring. She and her husband came to the conclusion that it had unintentionally become somehow mixed in with the vitamins that she took. She swallowed her wedding ring. They were able to locate a clinic when they got to Thailand and got x-rays. And sure enough, the x-ray proved that assumption, that conclusion, correct. She had, in fact, swallowed her wedding ring. As soon as the x-ray was taken, the ring was visible, Ms. McMichael says. Despite the language barrier, because they were in Thailand, we all had a good laugh about it. She was able to pass the ring naturally. And she posted about her experience on Instagram. At first, everyone was concerned about my health and how I was going to get the ring out. But after a while, they all joined in the laugh with me. One person commented on Instagram, who would have thought your ring would have a crazier trip than you? Your vacation overseas. Wow. That is, how does something like that happen? You swallowed your wedding. She said when she took the vitamins, she did have a little bit more trouble than usual getting them down, but she didn't think about it at first. Well, man. Crazy. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You don't think twice about wearing your seatbelt. Going boating? Real boaters wear a life jacket. It's easy to do. Accidents can happen quickly, and if you're not wearing your life jacket, you won't have time to put it on if it's stowed. So pick a comfortable life jacket and wear it. Remember, life jackets are for everyone, regardless of your age or swimming ability. Have fun, make memories, and boat responsibly. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and U.S. Coast Guard.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Here is an example of a case where the data, the statistics, don't always necessarily tell us the story we think they are telling us. New report from the credit rating company Experian finds that on average, Generation X, those adults born between the ages of 1965 and 1980, have the most debt of any other generation. On average, they have $157,500 in debt. Millennials have about $125,000 of debt on average, and baby boomers have the least of any generation at $94,880. Now, of course, that includes all kinds of debt, mortgages, children's expenses, student loans, and so on. And Gen Xers may have more of those expenses for their kids and for their own education and that sort of thing. But the folks at Experian, Rod Griffin with Experian, says generally as children leave the nest, their debt decreases. And as consumers get into the later stages of life, we see debt levels decrease and average credit scores increase. So basically what he's saying is this is not an unfamiliar refrain. These are not unusual numbers. And you hear a lot about, you know, young people having so much debt and so on. What he's saying is this is not altogether unusual. It is what we would expect to see generationally as people go through the various stages of life. And he adds that they have no reason not to expect to see a similar trend with Gen X as they age and begin paying off their mortgage, paying off their vehicles, and so on and so forth, that they will probably get into that time when they have less debt. And it's not necessarily, what he's saying is not necessarily the urgent crisis that maybe sometimes it is made out to be when you just look at the raw statistics. So I know it's only Thursday, and normally we do recipes on Friday, and we will tomorrow, but thought I'd share a bonus recipe for you this morning, because why not? And what would summer be without pool parties, backyard barbecues, and sweet treats? With that in mind, Domino's Sugar Chef, Eleonora Lahoud is with us this morning. She has a fresh twist on a summertime classic, so we just could not resist. And Eleonora, first of all, and this may be the most important point here, you emphasize that whatever we are making recipe-wise, we want to do it without spending a whole lot of time in the kitchen, because that kind of defeats the purpose of what summertime is supposed to be all about, right?
Correct, Chris. Thank you for having me today. I'm excited to be with you, and I want to tell you that your desserts can be impressive without wasting a lot of time in your kitchen. And my secret ingredient for that is using Domino light brown sugar.
All right. So share with us your crowd-pleasing summer dessert that anyone can make at home.
Well, I'm going to make you bake with me today. I'm going to walk you through baking a delicious s'more brownie skillet. This is going to be a crowd-pleaser in your summer barbecues, because it's easy and it has all the flavors of s'mores without the mess of s'mores that are usually a little hard to eat. So the first thing you do is you preheat your oven or barbecue to 350 degrees. So what's nice is that you can do it inside in the oven, or if you're using your barbecue, you just keep your barbecue on for to bake your skillet and at 350 degrees.
Okay.
Then you melt some chocolate and mix all your dry ingredients, flour, baking powder, and salt. For the exact measurements and step-by-step directions, your listeners can go to dominosugar.com.
Okay.
And now, Chris, are you ready for the magic? The magic happens when we use Domino Sugar, like brown sugar, in our new zipper bag. We have a new zipper bag that is easy to open. I love this bag because I can measure it. I can put in my measuring cup and I can measure it easily. So I measure half a cup of brown sugar. The brown sugar will give the brownie an amazing buttery caramel flavor in addition to those flavors in the brownie.
Okay.
And will also make it fudgy texture that you will really enjoy.
All right.
When you're done measuring your sugar, you just close it. So cleanup and storage, it's pretty easy with a new zipper bag.
After that,
you add the eggs to your sugar, vanilla, add the dry ingredients and the chocolate, and mix until well combined.
Okay.
Then you add the components of the s'mores. You add graham crackers, chocolate chips, and marshmallows to your batter, and pour it into your skillet. And you top it off with some of those same components. You bake it for around 10 to 12 minutes, and then you pull it out. You don't want to overbake it, Chris, because you still want that gooey texture of the brownie.
Okay.
And then you serve it family style and you dig in.
Mm.
You're really going to enjoy this dessert. And it's easy. So if you're not an expert baker, you can still make this one. Go ahead and try it.
Yeah, that sounds yummy. That would definitely be a hit at your next gathering. Any other tips that you can share? Anything else for us?
Yes, Chris. When people ask me, one of the tips that I share is that start using brown s'more to bake. We use a lot of granulated sugar to bake, and it's great, but brown sugar provides more than sweetness. It provides flavor, color, gives chewiness to your cookies. So if you want that additional extra flavor, like I mentioned before, of caramel notes or buttery notes, butterscotch notes, you can add use our brown sugar. So that's a great tip that I give. And if you want more tips, information, more recipes for savory, sweet cocktails or drinks, make sure you visit our website, dominosugar.com.
Very good. We will put that link up on our webpage as well. Renowned chef Eleanora LaHood with us this morning with a new twist on a summertime classic for you. Eleanor, thanks very much for taking the time. Enjoy the summer. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, of course, and that is goodmornings.net. You can also follow us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Again, goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. And now that you had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.